Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a TrueCash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate TrueCash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade-in for your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. Hey, it's Todd. Before we get started, if you like what you hear or you have any questions about this podcast, please tweet at me at @Todd_Garner on Twitter. Look forward to hearing from you.
For nearly 30 years, Todd Garner has overseen blockbuster films like Con Air, Anger Management, Triple X, 13 Going on 30, and Black Hawk Down.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Join Todd as he shares tips and stories from the front lines of producing in Hollywood.
I'm Adam Sandler.
I'm Rebel Wilson.
This is Jeff Probst.
This is Marlon Wayans.
I'm Eli Roth.
Hey, it's Ed Helms.
This is Shay Mitchell.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin James, and this is The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
Todd Garner.
What a combination.
The question I get asked most of all on Twitter and by people out in the world is, how do you get your movie made? I have a script. I want to make a movie, and I don't necessarily want to go through the studio system. How do I make a movie independently? I have to answer that question honestly, is I'm not the best person to ask, quite frankly. In all my years of making movies, I've really only made one movie independently. It was a horror movie, and we made it outside of the system. The rest of the movies I have made have been made by some form of a studio backed by domestic distribution. In fact, to be honest, backed by international distribution as well. They've been big corporations that have released my movies. So when I get asked that question, I'm at a little bit of a loss because I don't want to just bullshit people. I want to give people the real answers. And so I went out to try to find the person I thought could answer it the most succinctly, not go on for a long time because that can start to become confusing. So I reached out to Michael Ryan. He is a legend in the international sales business, and he has made a ton of independent movies. And while it was great to have Mr. Elways on, he has a huge history. I needed somebody really to talk about the practical aspects, the actual hardcore facts about if I have a script, how the hell do I get my movie made? One of the reasons I reached out to Michael was because at a recent AFM panel, the topic was independent movies are dead. And I wanted to know if that was true. I certainly have not been in that business long enough to know if it was true or not. And so a lot of people reached out to me on Twitter and said, you know, Jesus, is this true? If we have a script, how the hell are we going to get it made if not, you know, just going through a traditional studio? And Michael has the distinction of creating the organization that started the American Film Market, which is the festival that is in Santa Monica, where that panel was. So I thought he'd be the perfect person to reach out to and to really sort of in a nuts and bolts way, no bullshit, not going through like, you know, the history of independent film or his whole history in the movie business like I normally do, really to just bear down into the practical facts of getting your movie made if you're outside of the system. Who do you reach out to? What do all those terms mean, like equity and GAAP and MGs, and really focus in on, all right, I have a script. How the hell do I get it made outside of the traditional studio system? So if you're one of those people that is either interested in that or has a script and is trying to get it made outside of the system, I hope you enjoy this.
Divorce sucks, but it doesn't have to. Join celebrity divorce lawyer Laura Wasser on Divorce Sucks as she shares her expertise and chats with A-list guests like Joshua David Stein, Kate Hudson, and Anna Faris.
My plan B, instead of becoming a great novelist,
is porn voiceover.
Yeah, I like it.
Download new episodes of Divorce Sucks with Laura Wasser every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
This is The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner.
All right, I'm here with Michael Ryan. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm going to embarrass you for 1 second. I'm just going to read a little bit of your bio.
Difficult to embarrass.
Well, you might be. Well, you are a legend in international sales and production of independent films. In the mid-70s, he started with Sir Lou Grade in the TV industry with his UK company, ITC.
That's it.
1978, you're running your own company at the age of 28 with your colleague Julia Palau.
Yep.
It's called J&M Entertainment, and you started distributing, being a sales agent for independent films.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, J&M were founder members of the American Film Marketing Association, which later was renamed the Independent Film and Television Alliance, IFTA.
Correct.
Which was formed to provide an annual film market based in Los Angeles.
Right.
And you went on to start Handmade Films. And now you have a new company called GFM Films,
mm-hmm.
all in the independent space. So since mid to early 70s, you've been doing independent films.
That's right.
And so the reason why I wanted to have you on, because it goes back to your helping to start the American film market in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
is they had this panel at this film market where the panel basically said, foreign sales are done. Independent films is going to have to be made in a completely different way. Streamers are coming in and soaking up all the independent films. The independent film market is basically dying, and people freaked out. And I got a ton of tweets saying, what the hell do we do now? And I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I'm more of a studio guy. I'm not really an independent filmmaker. I'm an independent producer, meaning, you know, I'm living hand to mouth, movie to movie, but I don't make independent films. So, based on your vast knowledge and being a legend in this business, I thought we'd go through and talk about equity and pre-sales,
sure.
and loans or gap financing or bridge financing or tax credits and maybe crowdfunding and maybe even talk about agent funding because, you know, Endeavor and CAA and these places are doing funding, which is a bit of a sticky wicket right now. So let's just go through it. So if you were somebody, a young person or somebody who had a great script and you wanted to do it independently, walk me through what are all those different things, equity and loan and gap and bridge and all and crowdfunding. Walk me through all of those different ways to make an independent movie.
First of all, it's wrong. The premise of it's all dead is not true. There's always – I think – independent producers, independent financiers, sales agents, whatever you want to call them, if they're going to be successful, they've got to be fleet of foot. And that's what you have to be. If you're an independent producer, you want to make an independent film, the world is your oyster, basically. If it's good enough and you get people to get turned on by it, there are a zillion ways of doing it. You just have to find the people that know how to do that. And knowing how to do that is to find out where to go in the world, first of all, to base your movie. It's not square pegs in round holes. It's if you have a thriller in a city, in a European city, doesn't matter where you go. You can go from Prague to Romania to London to Paris to Amsterdam. And in each of those places, there will be state and federal taxes, tax rebates. So it's knowing where to go. If you don't have something that's commercial enough or good enough, or the attachments to it just won't make any difference, that's where the difficulty is. And
right.
in terms of breaking the mold and, yeah, the system's broken, it isn't, but it will be if you can't have something commercial on your plate. So if you've just got a piece of writing that's kind of okay, ain't going to work.
So let's start. If you have a script, and then regardless of genre, although I would feel, just from my own experience, that dramas seem to kind of be overwhelmingly the genre of the independent film world. Am I mistaken in that?
No, that's fair enough, I think. Although, if you think about what's happening, if you look at the top 20 at the moment, there's a couple of independent horror pictures in there.
Right.
Genre pictures are very much in vogue. They're much easier to finance. So if you've got a drama, most independent financiers, distributors will just say who's in it and who's directing it.
So the first thing you have to do if you have a script that you want to do independently is not just to have the script. You need to start putting the package together.
You need some elements. A producer isn't somebody who walks around with a piece of writing under his arm.
Right.
It just won't happen. You have to have some knowledge. And that in the main, is the big problem with the independent industry. Everybody thinks they're a producer. They're not. You've got to really know how to do it. It isn't just finding a piece of writing. So, yeah, you've got to build it with elements. I can go and start pre-selling it. I can go and attract financiers to it, whether they be equity or whether they be tax-based, whether it be bank, Gap. At some point, there's a commerciality that comes into play. And if it's proven to be a little successful in terms of a couple of sales here and there, then yeah, you've got something worth having.
So let's back up for 1 second. So the premise of this panel at AFM is that the way that the pre-sales, foreign pre-sales used to work was that the foreign television business was robust. They needed material. They liked the projects that came from the United States. And so they would also buy movies for their television stations locally. And so if you had a piece of material, you could go around and you could go to Germany and France and Italy and so forth. And they would then go to their sister television stations and they would say, how much for this movie starring Bruce Willis or whatever it was? They would give them a number. They would attach a little bit of bonus to that for the theatrical distribution and then give you a number and you would add up all those numbers and then you would have a beginning of how much you could spend on the movie, correct?
That's about right. If you're a French distributor, a German distributor, an English distributor, you'd need a TV company to back you up.
Right.
That doesn't really exist anymore.
Why is that?
Broadcasters are trimming their budgets. Feature films are quite expensive to buy, whether it's from major companies or whether it's from independents. They're finding greater audiences with reality TV. If you make a cooking program, it costs really pittance.
Right, and it's local language.
Sure. If you're buying a feature film, it'll cost you $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, whatever. So it's really – you get France, for instance, you get some of the major channels only having two or three feature films places to put a movie each week. So you're competing with a lot of people.
So when you have a script, let's just imagine we have a piece of material and we have gone and had managed to attract an actor and a director, let's just say,
yep,
without being specific about the names. Because I know, by the way, that those values, there's A, B, C levels.
Sure.
And that's based on how much international box office bank they have at each place, and the higher the movie star, the better the numbers.
There's a formula in
right.
that,
and those numbers are coming down because broadcasters are having a harder time.
Sure, there's no DVD business anymore. That's dead.
Right. So walk me through. I have a piece of material. I have an actor that has some international bankability, and I have a director that has probably a little bit of a track record, or at least a film that someone can watch to get really excited about. So walk me through all of the different ways. Let's start with equity.
Right.
What does that mean? And how would you go? I mean, you really could just go to a rich person and say, hey, do you want a real solid piece of this movie? But walk me through in general how somebody goes and acquires equity financing.
It's basically what you said in the first place. You've got a rich aunt, you can ask her for a credit card.
Or a lot of them.
Yeah, or how depends how rich. It's basically looking for equity, and it's single equity players, or usually in our business, it's equity funds.
Right.
There are funds out there which operate on a pure risk basis. Very risky, obviously, it's the movie business.
Right.
But it's very high return. So if you're looking at the first financing coming in, they're probably looking at a 50% return on their money. And if you're dangling George Clooney with them, they rather like that. It's like buying anything. If you look at the names attached to it, you look at the track record and it's attractive, you pick that one. You don't pick the 10th one down the list.
And somebody may say, I want to become an equity investor in this movie. What exactly does that mean? And how would those contracts be negotiated? Let's just, for fun, since you brought it up, let's just say through this entire exercise, we have a script that George Clooney will write and direct, we will star in it and direct, just for ease.
Yeah.
And now I've got this piece of material, I've got George attached, And would you recommend the first place to go to be to go to equity financing? What would you do?
Probably not, because if you've got somebody very attractive that's marketable, that's saleable, it doesn't happen very often, especially these days. So
right.
the pre-sales market, those sales are few and far between. But if you've got George Clooney, if you've
right.
got Tom Cruise, whoever it might be, you're pretty much guaranteed that you'll pre-sell it to a reasonably high degree. So you've got your pre-sales, then you can go to the bank to loan against them.
So you would start, if in a perfect world, you would always start with pre-sales.
Cheapest money.
Why is that?
Equity will cost you a lot of money because it has a big risk, and so therefore those investors get a higher reward. If you go to a bank, you're loaning at whatever their base rate is, plus a bit. It's very, very cheap money, especially right now, because the bank rates are very low. So,
well, we'll get there. So let's start with equity.
Yeah.
So this wouldn't be the first choice if you had a George Clooney movie, but describe to me how that would work. If you were an independent producer or somebody who had a script and a reasonable star, I mean, obviously, if it's like their brother Frank, you're probably – none of this is going to matter anyway. But if you can manage to find a reasonable star – and how would you begin to even look for equity financing besides your rich aunt?
It's might be a rich aunt as well. If you're good at what you do, if you're not, then you have to find somebody who is. Those people will have an awareness of funds that are around them in a particular country. It depends where you're based. I mean,
let's just say LA.
It's based in LA, there are loads of equity funds, and they're very high reward. So there's a lot of very, very ultra rich people who want to dabble with the film industry. It's attractive. There's all of that going for it. And by the way, the interest rates look really attractive. So
right.
let's have a little dabble. We're billionaires. We can just throw some into it.
So you would approach a billionaire with this package, and they would say...
Or several billionaires, probably
right.
based in a fund run by a manager.
Okay. And then they would say, what, we're going to invest in it. Is there generally a cap, or will...
No.
They feel the risk
it's
is.
It's exactly up to the person, and it's up to the person who's creating the financial package, the finance plan, as to how much they need, what they're willing to give them. It is expensive money.
And then what does that mean definitionally?
It means probably they'll be getting something like 20% on their money.
Right.
Payable back over 18 months usually.
And how would that work if I'm going and I'm going to try to get this movie made, to how would I pay them back in 18 months?
The best way, if you're an equity investor, is to have enough money to back a commercial project and not go to the bank. Because as soon as you go to the bank is in first position.
Right.
Any bank loan gives them first position against
right.
recoupment. Recoupment is all of the things that you've talked about. So it's territorial sales, it's tax rebates, it's public funds. All of that comes into the waterfall.
So let's say if you went to equity first, then let's just for sake of math, say it's a $10 million movie and they give you $5 million
yeah.
for 20% of the movie. Once you then start to do all your foreign pre-sales and all of that waterfall, you start to pay back your investors because you already have that $5 million.
Exactly.
In. Okay. And so then that – now let's say you have that bit of equity and you now have your partners that have invested with you. What would be the next phase? Would it be pre-sales?
If you have a reasonable actor, yes, because it's the cheapest money you can find. You're gonna let's say – I mean these days if you're pre-selling – with a reasonable cast, you can probably guarantee you'll get 20% of the budget, maybe 25%. If you've got somebody attractive, then you're looking at maybe 50%.
Right.
So you're already ahead of the game.
Which is why you normally don't go to equity first.
Exactly.
You want to know how much you have to
yeah.
fill in the rest
because
of your budget.
Because it's the cheaper money.
Right. So then it used to be you would go to Cannes, you would go to the American Film Market,
sure.
you would go to Berlin because that's where all the foreign distributors are. But now there's a lot of activity going on outside of the festivals because it's easy to get in touch with these people and to at least give them some sort of idea of what you're looking for. So but let's just say for ease, you go to the American Film Market, you have your script and you've got – this is now – we're pretending we didn't go to equity first. You would go to this market and you'd have a booth. How would this work?
Yeah, you'd have your clientele out there. You'd, if you're any good at it, it's not just a market-driven thing. It's these days, it's 365 days a year, and
right.
you've got to have people traveling. They've got to know who they're talking to, who their client base is. Yeah, it is possible to go to the AFM or Cannes. We're just coming up to Cannes. There will be several projects that are launched there. And if they're the right blend of genre, they're the right cast, the right director, a good screenplay, then you stand a chance of almost financing the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
If you know what you're doing.
And you, as a producer with a script and a package, a lot of times will hire a sales agent, right? That's what your company was.
Yeah, well,
I would hire you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you would say, okay, I know everybody in the game.
Yeah.
Maybe you need another element. Maybe you would then advise them of how to take this to market to get the highest sale, because you're obviously going to take a percentage of that.
Exactly. And we'd basically be at that point, if the sales agent or the financier salesperson is any good, they'll be advising the people what to do in terms of casting, where to go in terms of director, the best place to shoot. All of that comes out of the relationship between the producer and the sales financing outfit.
So really, the first place somebody should go if they have an independent script, even with one element that they feel is really bankable, probably come to a company like yours or another foreign sales company,
yeah,
to really start to get some advice of how to put this whole thing together.
You have to have marketplace knowledge. And if you don't, you just get swamped. If you're an independent producer, you're going to Cannes, even if you've got a great big movie, you'll get lost. Right. You have to have somebody to guide you through the morass of stuff there is out there.
And then the third least desirable one would be loans from a bank, and that is your gap. And that would be the last resort of the last piece you need, correct?
Yeah, it is. You'll go with your bit of equity from your
auntie. Which is why it's called gap finance.
Exactly. And there's gap and super gap and God knows what. But if you've got something which costs a lot of money, it's still cheaper than any other money.
Well, okay.
Because if you've got enough security,
it's just an interest rate rather than giving away 20% of the money.
Exactly.
So equity is by far the most expensive.
Yeah, and they take a large
unless it's your aunt and she doesn't know about
it. Yeah, she won't know. What does she know about it? She's got too much money anyway. It's really the most expensive piece. So you try not to use that. It's tempting. It's easy. You know, your aunt's money is very easy.
Right.
But banking is the best way. Selling and banking is the best way, if you can possibly do it. And they're few and far between now.
Right. And so you would start with your tax credit first? I'm just trying to put this in order for people.
I would start with the soft money first. So all of the tax funding, all of the state funding.
Knowing kind of really what your budget is.
Sure. You should be able to – it's a balancing act.
Right.
If I spend that much, will I get that much back?
Right.
But starting with the soft money is really the way to go. So you'd go, I've got a movie that I want to do in a studio in a city. I'll go to Belgium. They've got a great tax structure. And then it's British, so maybe we'll do the post-production in the UK. We'll get some advantage from that. And then we've got another bit. Why don't we go to France? Because you'll get 30% out of them, probably. It's a jigsaw puzzle.
And then once you put that jigsaw puzzle together, you have a real budget now.
Yeah.
Because you've taken all that soft money. You've taken your gross budget down to this net budget, putting all your tax credits in. Then the next piece you would do is find a sales agent. I'm talking to somebody who doesn't know this business.
Sure.
So then I would find a sales agent next and say, look, I've done this much work already. I've got this pretty good movie star. Not George Clooney, because that's ridiculous, but like a big, pretty good movie star. I need your advice now. Here's the budget. This is how much I need. And you would say, okay, probably given this person, I can get 15% to 20% more on that. But if you added this other person, maybe I could get it a little bit higher, and that becomes the balancing act to try to narrow that gap.
Exactly.
Narrow that gap as small as you can to go get your movie made.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gap is the last piece where you would go to the bank and say, look, I need this much more. And now that's probably where you would need domestic distribution, correct? Because the bank is really going to be
– it's the last piece.
The last piece.
It's the last piece simply because it's the most difficult.
Right.
And most – most banks will not lend against a gap which includes the United States.
Right.
They'll just value it at zero,
right,
literally. So you need to get that done if you can. If you've got your pretty good actor and your good director, there are obviously places to stop in the United States where you can go to get that. But when I first started doing this, and we invented a lot of it, you'd reckon that the United States would represent 50% or so of your budget.
Right.
Now you're lucky if it's 10.
Wow.
So it's tough, unless you've got something exceptional.
So what are you doing? Tell me how you...
I don't know. I don't know why I'm doing it.
Well, I know, but none of us do. But tell me now what you're doing. So how has it, I mean, without having to go through your monumental whole career and how much there's been a shape-shifting in that, just recently in the last couple of years, what are you doing now as an independent filmmaker?
What we needed to do was not be at the mercy of the independent producers that are coming in and not really being very good at what they do.
Right.
So we've tried to move closer to owning the copyright, owning the IP. So if we can do that, we control it.
Right. So let me just back up one second.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you, not being very good at what they do?
It means that they'll do exactly what you said in the in your last bit of what you were, with the way you were describing it. They will have gone to Belgium.
Right.
And it won't be appropriate.
Right.
Or they've gone to the wrong person and they don't have the money.
Because they don't know.
Exactly. So the first thing they really should do when they've got themselves together and they've secured their rights is to come to somebody like me.
Right.
And just to say, okay, where do we go now? I need a cityscape. I need a studio. I need a river. What should we do? Where can we go with this? How do we save money?
I see.
Do I go to Canada and do the whole thing in Canada? And there's all sorts of options, obviously a myriad of them, but you've got to know the right ones and what's happening at the right time.
And you'll also,
it changes.
Right, I'm sorry. And you'll also be able to read the script and say,
yeah,
I don't think I can sell this, or it seems really good. You might have the wrong element attached. Maybe we can either put a new element in or really shore it up with these different elements, because I know from my vast experience, this is going to get you the most money to
right.
be able to make the movie in the proper way.
No, it's exactly right. I mean, I have four salespeople, all of whom read mm-hmm. all the time.
Right.
And they're very good. They read quickly. They'll be able to give an instant reaction. Is this a marketable product? Is it something your clients that you're going to are going to want to put in their cinemas? Because most of what we do is theatrically driven now, even though perhaps it might end up with Netflix or Amazon or whoever it might be. If there's a streamer that comes and picks it all up, it's still got to be structured as a theatrical movie, because there's no video business anymore. There's no DVD. It's all been taken away from us, mostly by piracy and a lot by disinterest. So you need, in almost every single territory, if it's going to be a movie that's worth making, it'll be a movie that needs to appear in the cinema.
Right. Okay.
Or a streamer.
So it has to have that. Going in, it has to have the raison d'etre.
Yes.
It has to feel like a movie.
For all sorts of reasons. For finding the auntie's equity, or for finding the financial broker who's interested in doing it simply because it's got your star in it. All of those things are sales points right the way through to the guy in the street's going to buy his ticket.
Right.
So if you don't approach it that way, this is my business. Other businesses will make smaller movies
right.
and they'll go straight to radio, most of them. But if you manage to structure it right and it plays theatrically, and don't forget, as an independent, you're playing in a very small field, because major company pictures take up 80 to 85% of the screen time anyway.
Right.
So it's got to be exceptional. So you've got to find what works. How often can you find a comedy that's funny?
Right.
And a romantic comedy that's not even romantic. There's no love story. You just got to be aware of the marketplace, and that takes people who are there every day.
And then once you find something you really get excited about, walk me through how you put a movie together.
We'd look for, obviously, the producers bringing it to us, or maybe we develop it ourselves. We do that occasionally. We've just started a huge animation business, and that works very well, thank God.
Because it can be in any language. It can be in any language.
It has a very long tail.
Right.
It keeps going forever. And if it's good, it does repeat.
And if I bring you a movie as a producer, you become my partner in it.
Yeah.
So you own it in with me.
Yeah.
And we become partners in the project. So where would you do first? You would go to foreign sales first.
My company is basically your executive producer.
Right.
So we'd go with you. You hopefully, if you're an experienced producer, you'd have your own ideas as to where to go. You've got your auntie. once all that starts, that's where my contacts come into play, because we're doing it all day, every day, and we have banking relationships, and we have lawyer relationships, we have tax relationships. So we become your partner.
Right.
We walk around with you and put it together. So it'll be little bits of equity. There'll be, we'll go to a bank that knows how to gap it and how much of a gap to give, and whether they're generous in their terms, in terms of, you know, they'll bank 85% of the contracts you've made already.
And that, by that point, you would have to have a domestic distributor.
Not necessarily. Most of the independent films that are made at the moment are being made without a U.S. distributor.
So they're just going to have to make it with the budget, taking out that 10%
exactly.
for the domestic distribution.
And if you're lucky, you make a nice deal. If you're unlucky, it doesn't get sold.
Right.
And that happens relatively often.
Right.
There's not that many people out there buying U.S. distribution rights.
Right. And where are those mostly selling now? It feels like it's off market, I mean, off these markets more than
it's not,
Sundance. Although Sundance had a pretty robust selling season, mostly because of Netflix.
Yeah, which I don't really understand, because you look at the track record of Sundance titles, it ain't great.
Yeah.
But it was a terrific hype, and it worked very well. And because of the streamers, everybody did very well.
And does that motivate then independent producers to take those risks more, figuring that there might be a giant backstop out there if the movie turns out well and it plays well at a, you know, midnight screening at Sundance, that you have now Hulu and Disney Plus and Amazon and the Apple coming into the thing, that you actually might be able to make a big score?
It's certainly in your, it's got to be part of your mindset when you're going to the marketplace. But if you are relying on it, then you're dead. I've been speaking to a production company recently who are funding things themselves from their own capital. And one of them said to me a couple of weeks ago, well, I mean, we're going to make it and then we're going to sell it. So I'm saying, well, okay, but it's then got to be really good. Yeah, but if it's not great, we can take it to Netflix.
That's
and
ridiculous.
It's like, no, you won't.
Yeah.
They're not a bloody backstop.
No.
They're a commercial outfit.
Right.
And they're not going to pick up your old dross.
There are people out there who are seeing those big numbers and are taking more risk because they do feel like there are places for them to go with these streamers.
I mean, I certainly think a lot of people are, you know, woe is me about all the streamers that are coming along and all of the platforms that will exist in a year's time. I think that's a good thing. I
Me
think
too.
Those people are future clients.
Oh yeah,
they're not wrecking.
I've made a couple of movies in Netflix.
Good for you.
Believe me.
And yeah, me too.
Yes,
and it's kind of against my natural. But you know, I'm an independent filmmaker, so
right.
I'm not supposed to do that. But the money's very nice.
Yeah,
it's
well beyond that. Beyond the money being nice, in quotes, it is a chance for independent filmmakers to take away a lot of – first of all, it's risky to make an independent film.
Sure.
And then it's risky to sell an independent film because you don't have any idea if you're – you're again betting on yourself a lot of these times. A lot of times people say, well, look, I'm going to buy your movie for slightly below your negative cost and then you're going to have a big up. You're taking another risk. At least with Netflix, you're in these streamers, they buy it and you know what you're getting for your money, and that's it. And you move
get
on with your life.
Overage or whatever it might be, and off you go again.
Yeah.
It's attractive.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's part and parcel of what we do. It's another opportunity, another sales pitch. There's another shop on the high street which is selling.
Yeah.
You know, that's a place to go. Makes sense.
And then what do you think about crowdfunding? And then spend the last few minutes talking about this agent, the agent funding. Have you had any experience crowdfunding a movie like Zach Braff did or any of these people?
No, I've got two or three friends who are doing it. They tend to be very low budget. So you're out there looking for a couple of $100,000 or something. That's relatively simple, especially if you've got a gimmick. Again, there's a sales point to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would I possibly do that?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's something very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a lesbian vampire picture or whatever it is.
Something a fan would want to see.
Exactly.
Throw money at, right?
And movies you don't normally see, but I can be part of that.
Right.
And it's my thing.
Right.
And it depends on the structure of the crowdfunding is interesting because you get all sorts of people trying to do it. There's a lot of short films are crowdfunded. Those are difficult to make. They're very difficult to fund because where do they go after they're made?
Right.
Are they just student films or are they just an intro or what are they? And some of them are just brilliant and I wish there was still an outlet for them, you know, before the main feature, but that was a long time ago.
Right.
but it would be better than watching ads. I think it works. I still think you've got to have something saleable. And if you haven't, you're just throwing a stone into the ocean.
Right, just got fan fiction or something.
Yeah, there's no real point. And then what do you do? You have a selection of projects that you've been trying to crowdfund, and you've got, you know, $1,000 there and 10 there and 6 there. And
right.
It's that's a difficult business. And it's also, I think it's also a specialist business. So if you're a producer out there who thinks, oh, I'll give it a whirl, you know, why not? I think it's very difficult,
right.
and it's a specialist thing. I've done it twice with friends, but I've done it through a funder who knows how to do those things. I would never do it on my own.
Because you're then responsible for all of those different inputs coming.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work.
To just manage the money.
Yeah, right? I'm managing the money, raising the money, you know, going around to see these people. You know, it's really a specialist job. And if you're a filmmaker, make the film.
Right.
You know, let somebody else do the crowdfunding.
So now, well, this brings us to this last big point right now that's very hot in Hollywood, which is this agent funding movies. So there's Endeavor Content. There's all these different places that are – the agencies are – actually making movies, like a studio. They're saying to their clients, hey, you'll own a piece, we'll own a piece, we'll fund it. We know, look, we set the sales estimates generally, so we'll set the sales estimates, we'll go borrow against it, and you'll go get to make your movie. How is that affecting your business, and how does that work? And it is a big deal of why the writers are starting to get agitated with the agents, because they're not – everything's starting to get very murky in terms of funding these movies.
It is murky. In describing it the way you just did, there's nothing wrong with trying to control the whole process. It's what studios have been doing since they were created. But I do have a problem in that if you're holding back talent or making perhaps lower offers to talent because you're packaging the whole thing and you're manufacturing the whole thing right the way through to the finished product, I have a problem with that. I want to know that if I go to an actor with an attractive piece and I'm willing to offer them $1 million, I want to know that because he's doing a picture within his own agency, within his own setup, with his own salespeople, his own distribution people, I want to know that he got offered the same as me.
Right.
I don't want to hear that he's doing it for 500,000.
I see.
And that's the problem. I think that's an unfair advantage. I don't think that's kosher. And I appreciate the problem with writers because they are being packaged. And it's with writers in particular, it really affects them. It's not so much the actor.
Right.
That, you know, the actors can control their own destiny. And if they're big actors, they can really control it. But it's that unfair trading that I don't like, and I'm not sure it's ever possible to control these things by legislation. I don't think so. Don't think it should be, really. But I do think there is something, there should be a bit of a moral conscience issue there, I think. Whether that exists, I don't know.
Right. And so what advice would you have for anybody who's listening to this that's a young person or a person that's had this great piece of material for a long time? Where should they start? What's the first step, practical step, somebody can take to get their movie made?
For me, the first step is try not to do it all on your own and believe in your own judgment of people. There are people out there that specialize in all sorts of bits and pieces of the industry. But you've got to work with somebody who's knowledgeable and who has some trust. And I think that's the most important thing. It's all to do with imagination, hope, and all the rest of it. But at the same time, a film is a collaborative process. And if you don't collaborate and you try and do it all on your own, there are very, very, very few people that can do that. And if you're starting out doing it, you'll come unstuck.
And what's the best way to make those kind of contacts?
I think there are lots of associations. I have my own one, which I'm chairman of.
Which is that?
Which is the IFTA, which runs and created the American film market.
And somebody can join that if they're an independent producer? They can come and join that?
They can't join as an independent producer because you have to be a sales and funding company. But you can join in with the person who is.
I see.
So there's a well, in my particular one, there's 150 odd member companies.
And where would you find that, like on the internet? Where would you find that information?
Go onto the internet.
And then you can look and find different sales agencies that they can.
And you look at their track record. And there's nothing like networking. For me, that's the only real way of doing it. You know, speak to people who have used those companies. Speak to people who understand it. If you're a first-time producer, speak to a guy who's made a few movies.
How? Where would be the best person to place a network to find someone like you?
It's probably going to be going to a few film festivals.
Got it.
That's really the place to go. And there are, if you're American, you can go to the AFI. And they'll guide you around somewhere like Cannes or Berlin. You know, you've got to have, if you're a first-time independent producer, you'll get eaten alive by the French.
Don't start with Cannes. Start with the AFM, which is in Santa Monica. It's low impact. You get to go to the Lowe's. You'll be fine.
It's fine. You can have a drink in Casa del Mar. Just sit there and they'll come to
you. There's a shuttle. It'll be fine. All right. Well, that's fantastic advice, man.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Just something that I'm just a neophyte in myself. I've been doing this for so long and I've never made a movie independently. I've tried. And every time it comes to, well, if you get this actor, then I generally get waylaid.
But that does tend to happen. But then you're going to the wrong people.
Oh, well, that's why I had you on this podcast, my friend. You have the right person now.
I mean, the obvious answer, you know, the dumb sales agent would sit there and go, I can't sell more than 10% of the budget for that. So tell the producer he's got to go and get somebody better. Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why I was so fascinated to have Cassian on, because he just talks about fleet of foot.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so agile in being able to, you know, turn on a dime and be able to get things done for the people that he cares about and the projects that he cares about.
Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah. Amazing advice. Thank you, brother. Thank you for coming in
it's
and
a
doing
pleasure.
This. I really appreciate
it's a
it. Thank
Thanks,
you so man. Much.
Thank
Thanks.
You. Thanks very much.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Producer's Guide. We're produced by Kirsten Woodward and Steve Delamater. I want to answer all your questions about the business, so make sure to tweet me at Todd_Garner or use hashtag Producer's Guide on Twitter. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Download new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger, host of the not-so-creatively titled Jordan Harbinger Show. We dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers, and then we deliver them to you right into your ears. It's more than just a way to get inspired, and I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint and include worksheets for every episode, as well as answer your listener questions so you can live what you listen. Listen free to the Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.